welcome into the show. I'm Adrian Healy in the delightful company of one Alejandro Moreno, where Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop will be along later to help preview the weekend in the Premier League. First, though, let's continue our remembrance of perhaps the greatest footballer who ever lived. Almost without a doubt, the greatest footballer who had ever lived. Alejandro Moreno hasn't had a chance to weigh in. Ali, you've seen the scenes today in Buenos Aires, the huge outpouring of grief as Maradona is being laid to rest. They've declared 3 days of national mourning in Argentina. Massive crowds, some saying close to a million in this times of COVID as well. Quite remarkable. What's your reflection on this?
It's to be expected. The love and appreciation and passion that exists with Diego Maradona in Argentina is something that we've known for years, and some of us have had the experience of actually living through some of it. When you consider the emotional connection with Diego Maradona, and it's not just the soccer player, you see, it's what you see on the field is one thing, but it's what the name of Maradona does for you individually and what that emotional connection is. In my case, and I'll just take you back to the 80s in Venezuela, there was one game that was played in every television on a Sunday morning, and that was a Serie A game. And usually it was a Napoli game because Maradona was playing. So it was Maradona against Milan, Maradona against Inter, Maradona against Verona, Maradona against Juventus. And so it takes me back to those days. It takes me back to Sunday morning. You wake up early. I run into my parents' bedroom. That's where the TV was. I get into bed, and right after Formula One, it was Maradona on television. That was every Sunday of every week of just whoever know how many years that was. And so when you generate that connection, and it's an emotional connection at that, then the name of Maradona transcends. It takes me back to recess in school, trading for cards and doing a three-way deal because I needed to get the Maradona card. And so I needed to convince somebody to give me cards that the other kid needed so that then I could then get the Maradona card. And when I got that Maradona card, it's that emotion that I'm talking about. It's that emotional connection. It's being in your parents' bed, seeing the game. It's collecting that card. And then you spin it forward 20 years, and I've seen him every Sunday playing for Napoli, right? And I've traded for his card, and I have that connection. And 20 years later, we go to El Monumental, Buenos Aires, Argentina against Venezuela, World Cup qualifier, the first official match for Maradona as a coach of the national team, and I'm on the field playing against a team coached by Diego Maradona. Yeah. It's an overwhelming connection.
Yeah.
And it's not something I dreamt of. It's not something that I woke up when they said, you know, this is what I want to do. I could not have pictured that as a possibility in my life. And yet it happened. And so when you put it all together, it becomes very overwhelming. And that's just my personal experience. Imagine what the experience of this millions and millions of people has been. And that's why you see the outpour of grief, the outpour of support, the outpour of people just trying to get one last look at Diego Maradona. It's difficult to put into words, and certainly for those of us that grew up with Maradona as your soccer hero, you wanted to be Maradona. In South America, it was Maradona and then everybody else, and of course, the ever-present rivalry of Maradona and Pelé. But that was the name, and for me, that's who I grew up with. It was Maradona, watching him, collecting his cards, and then eventually playing against them.
It's great to hear that perspective from South America, even though it was a different country. And a perspective shared, obviously, in Europe, particularly in the places he played, and particularly in Naples. We've seen the scene with Napoli fans and how they've remembered Maradona. It's always been fascinating to me, Ali, that he had his best years as a player in the city of Naples.
In a place that had no business having success as a team. And if you go and watch the Maradona documentary that was published a year or two ago, and what that experience was like for Maradona himself, but for the fans of Napoli and what it meant, how they were looked down upon from the rest of Italy, and he single-handedly, seemingly, just took Napoli and put it in a whole different platform, in a whole different atmosphere, one that they did not have access to before and haven't really had access to since. Diego Maradona became bigger than life, became bigger than life in Argentina, became bigger than life in Napoli. When you think about the 1990 World Cup semifinal and that semifinal happened to be Argentina against Italy, played at the San Paolo Stadium in Napoli, Yes.
And the sort of conflict of emotion of the people in Naples. Who am I supporting here?
Yes. That was amazing, wasn't it?
Am I supposed to support Italy? Because, right. See, the rest of Italy looked down upon us for a long, long period of time.
Yeah.
And then this guy right here, Diego Maradona, he's the one that put us in a different platform. So am I supposed to root against my country and root for Maradona? And that in itself just kind of gives you an idea how big of a figure he was in Naples.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the 1986 World Cup as being his elite moment. But that moment in 1990, I will never forget that, when Naples didn't know. Yeah. And they were pulling for Argentina.
And in terms of moments, if we go back to that game that I was just speaking of, Venezuela against Argentina in Buenos Aires, everybody has their own stories about Maradona, and we have seen over the last couple of days guys on the show talking about their own connection and their own stories and things that they have heard about Maradona, or things that they have experienced with Maradona. In my case, it's not a story that I heard. It's not something that somebody told me. It's not something that has been passed down. It's something that I lived through. With Maradona as the coach of Argentina, every time they're passing the ball around, for whatever reason, Verón wasn't a very popular player at the time, and he, controversially, picked Verón to be on his team. They're passing the ball around, okay, pass, gets to Verón, the whole stadium, 70,000 people, or however many people were there, booing Verón. So pass, boo. Maradona realizes what happened, or what's going on, so he then walks out onto the technical area, and the next time that Verón touches the ball, well, he starts clapping for Verón and then kind of giving one of these to the stadium to clap for Verón. And wouldn't you know it, that the next time that Juan Sebastián Verón touched the ball, that stadium, the whole energy changed. All of a sudden, they're clapping for Verón. They're cheering for Verón. The whole stadium now said, okay, if Diego is telling us to clap for that guy, we're going to clap for that guy. And I saw that first and I thought to myself, man, the magnetic pull, the obsession, the religious experience that it is between the Argentinian people and Diego Maradona, it cannot be explained. It's something that goes beyond trying to describe it with words. And it's a feeling that you get. And when you're in that stadium and you see that happen, then you really tell yourself, this guy is in a whole entirely different level, in a whole entirely different category. They were there to watch Argentina play. They were there to watch Messi play and Agüero play and a few of the guys that were on the field. But really, they were there to watch Maradona walk the technical area. And every time he then started clapping, all you could hear, Diego, Diego, Diego. They were there for him, not for anybody else.
I don't think any other player has transcended the sport in the manner that Maradona did. But when it comes to the actual playing of the sport, was he the greatest ever?
Well, it's difficult this week not to say that indeed he was. What I can tell you is that he had the greatest single World Cup run that you could possibly have. Nobody has had a better World Cup than what Diego Maradona had individually. And it's not just the goals, it's the leadership, it's carrying the team, it's getting the ball in tight areas and escaping those spaces and scoring the goals, or passing, or movement, or leadership, or vision. Everything that you wanted from a player that was supposed to be a star, you got from Diego Maradona in that very World Cup, and that remains and will remain, I think, in my view, as the greatest single performance we have seen in a World Cup ever.
Thank you so much for your personal memories. Added a lot of flavor. We will continue to provide further remembrance of Diego Maradona in the coming days.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Heading into week 10 of the Premier League season, this is the table. Newcastle moving into the top half of the table with a Friday night win against Crystal Palace. But all eyes on the London derby on Sunday. Chelsea against Spurs at Stamford Bridge, first against third as they stand. Before the game, the words of Tottenham boss Jose Mourinho.
With such an amazing squad, you know, to play James or Azpilicueta, to play Chilwell, Alonso or Emerson, to play Mandi or to play the most expensive goalkeeper of the history of the Premier League. Chelsea has an amazing squad. So I'm not even worried about who is going to play because they only have very good players.
Joined now by Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop to preview it. Jose Mourinho, Craig, the pass master, isn't he, in talking up the opponents? By the sound of it, Spurs might as well not bother showing up at Stamford Bridge.
Well, I'm not going to talk about I'm not going to worry about the opposition because the squad is so deep, but I'm going to tell you about them anyway. I'm going to tell you about the two or three players he's got for every possession, and I don't have that, basically, is what he's saying. But of course, in some sense, he is correct. Chelsea did go out, and Roman Abramovich's regime really backed Frank Lampard in the summer. They've signed well. They have got a couple of bodies for every possession. And particularly going forward, they've looked a real threat. And of course, with the addition of Mendy in goal and Thiago Silva, they really look a lot more solid along that back line because that was a big problem for them last year.
Looking at the possible Chelsea starting at 11 on Sunday at Stamford Bridge. A lot of choices for Frank Lampard to make. Shaka, it's interesting because both teams are in great form. Chelsea have won six straight in all competitions. Spurs have won seven out of their last eight.
Yeah, and Spurs are 100% on the road this season. And given their result, albeit at home against Manchester City, they certainly seem like, or you would think, are the form team or the favourites going into this one. But as rightly point out, this is a very different Chelsea. This is a very different Chelsea from last season that finished fourth. And I think finding their best. They've scored, 11 goals in their last three home games. And given the form that Mendy has been in, this is a Chelsea that seemed determined to eclipse Spurs, find themselves at the top of this table, and will look to stay there. Spurs certainly would have something to say about that, but I think this is a game that Frank Lampard and Chelsea would be more up for, given the recent exchanges between them and their old boss.
And Craig, with players returning to full fitness, Frank Lampard has more and more choices to make. It seems like Kai Havertz is on the outside looking in at the moment.
Well, I would be surprised if he's not because, you know, it's at the moment, where do you try and fit Havertz in? And I think with Christian Pulisic, I believe, who's returned to fitness as well, I don't really think he has anybody that's out injured of any note. So, look, I don't see him doing much different to what he did at Newcastle last week. He seems to prefer the big man through the middle, Werner on the left, Ziyech on the right, Mount a little bit deeper with Kovacic and Kante, who's back in full form, and I think everybody else is fighting for the place on the bench and going to try and fight for the place back in the team. But look, in some sense, Adrian, they're going to face what they faced last week against Newcastle, a deep-lying defensive side, but a much better outfit, much better players, much better to hit on the transition with the counter-attack with Son and Harry Kane, and the list goes on. But what Chelsea did well that City didn't do well against Tottenham last week is they got width at Newcastle. So they were able to stretch them a little bit. They were able to get balls into the box. And if they can do that, they do have the big man, and we think it'll be Abraham, playing through the middle. The other problem Chelsea will have is, and Tottenham are going to try and play on it, is if you look at Harry Kane's positioning in recent matches, dropping a little bit deeper, Thiago Silva and Kurt Zouma, the two centre-halves we think will play, I've got some thinking to do. Because we saw the City defenders dropping in and then Son making those diagonal runs. So there's going to have to be a lot of talking between the two centre-halves and N'Golo Kante to make sure that Harry Kane, when he drops into those false nines midfield positions, they don't get sucked in and the runners go off them. That's what Tottenham are going to try and do to Chelsea. I'm intrigued to see how they do it better defensively than Man City did last week.
We're looking at the Spurs' potential starting 11. Of course, Son has been in great goal-scoring form of late. Xhaka, Jose Mourinho has actually failed to win on his last five visits to Stamford Bridge, taking various teams back to Chelsea. He hasn't won there since he took Inter there and they won in the Champions League in 2010. How do you see this going on Sunday?
I already mentioned Spurs' away record this season, and but to put that in perspective, in their last two on the road against Burnley and West Brom, those were narrow wins and late goals in those two. But this Spurs team is better equipped and prefers to play on the road and against opposition higher up in the league or the bigger teams in the league, as you saw against City last week. I agree with Craig. I don't think Chelsea will make the same mistakes that Manchester City did. They play with three centre-halves and two wing-backs bombing on. Harry Kane just sat in between the two lines, and every time Spurs broke, it seemed to be 3v3. Given Chelsea playing a back four, you don't see that happening. Given the form that N'Golo Kante has been in, again, you don't see Harry Kane getting the kind of space that he did against City. It may be typical but a frustrating evening for Spurs and Jose Mourinho. I just feel tactically and in terms of the one-on-one matchups, Chelsea are better equipped to get the better of Spurs here.
Craig, from a Chelsea perspective, it is the attack of obviously it's getting all the plaudits and the attention, but their defence has really stepped it up too, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, just the very fact that Kurt Zouma can have Thiago Silva and the wealth of his experience next to him to talk and cajole him and guide him and, you know, get obviously, you know, Kurt Zouma is the more physical, the quicker, the younger of the two by some distance. So in some sense, he can cover around any mistakes that Thiago Silva makes. On top of that, they've got a natural left back in Chilwell. And Reece James has really been a phenomenon, and he really has. And not only has he pushed himself into Chelsea side, but he's going to put Alexander-Arnold under pressure for that England slot. So, yeah, the defence, and of course the goalkeeper has been brilliant, and Shaq has touched on that, but the defence had to be better because they shipped a lot of goals last year, a lot of goals, and some of it was down to the goalkeeper, and some of it wasn't. And so Frank Lampard understood this, and he was backed in the market, and they've gone out, and they do look stronger. We'll see if they have learned those lessons that City didn't learn the week before, and if they have and they can deal with that, they've got a chance they've got a better chance of winning this game because they can nullify Tottenham in that sense. City did not. The other side of the coin is Toby Alderweireld's been a big player for Tottenham. He's not available. And the likelihood is that somebody like Davinson Sanchez comes in now. He was jettisoned by Mourinho after the debacle that was Tottenham being 3-0 up against West Ham with only minutes to go, and they lost three goals. And he just threw a couple of players, Harry Winks and others, to the sidelines. He's going to have to bring at least one of those back in. So they're weakened at the back. All the roads at the moment are pointing for me towards a Chelsea win if they get the defensive aspect of the game right, because their attacking aspect will come naturally.
And Xhaka, you did already mention it. How much is the arrival of Mendy in goal responsible for the upturn in fortunes defensively for Chelsea?
I think he's been simply huge, Mendy. From the time he stepped in, I remember his first game and all eyes would be on him. I think the only misstep he had in that game, I can't remember who it was against, was he came for a cross but didn't get there. And then ever since that, he's been assured, and which is what Chelsea needed. Chelsea needed two things. A centre-back who could lead while on the field. I think they found that in Thiago Silva. And a goalkeeper that everybody could rely on. Because when you have a keeper that you know you can count on, that you don't have to second guess, naturally you play more a little bit more attacking. You play 5 yards higher up the field. And that's where Chelsea is at their best, attacking a And every time they turn around, whenever Mendy's been called on, he's been simply outstanding. He's not put a foot wrong since. That has totally transformed Chelsea defensively, but more to the point, Chelsea as an attacking force as well.
All right, prediction time. I think, Craig, I'm safe to say you're going with Chelsea. That's what I ascertained.
Well, yeah, and listen, I think it's quite simple. If Chelsea have not learned lessons from watching the videos of last week, then Tottenham are more than good enough to win this game. But I'd like to think, with all the players there that Shaq mentioned and the leadership of Silva, and N'Golo Kante's form has been fantastic, and that's a hugely important part that Harry Kane drifts into, I fear Chelsea will be better at that than City. And then the front line has looked great with the support from the midfield, particularly Mason Mount, who's been excellent again for the second season. So I'm going for Chelsea to nullify that Tottenham attack and create enough chances to win this game.
Real quick, Shaki, your prediction?
I just don't see much joy for Spurs. Chelsea 2-0.
There it is. We will have full analysis on Sunday's edition of the show. Remember, 7 days a week.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is what the rest of the weekend in the Premier League looks like. Let's focus in on two interesting trips to the South Coast. Liverpool taking on Brighton, Manchester United on Sunday, travelling to play Southampton. Mr. Burley, I'll bring you in first on United against Southampton. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's men looking for their fourth consecutive win. They found wins easier to get on the road, but this is going to be a tricky trip for them.
Yeah, they got a good win, and say a good win, Man United against Besiktas here, but it was a win, and they were under pressure as the game went on, but it was a win, and they got game time for Cavani, so the team selection will be interesting. He worked really, really hard, obviously needs match time, but this Southampton's, and it depends what Man United pitch up, and we just don't know that, and in some sense, Solskjaer doesn't know that either. That's the problem. But what I would say about Southampton is one defeat in eight, and that was at home against Tottenham when they got hammered 5-2. So they have to have learned their lessons from that. But they've been in good form. They've still got no Danny Ings, so that's a blow for them. But what Hasan Hüttl has done there in his time at the club, I think, has been fantastic. So if the real Man United pitch up, I think they win. If they're slack, I think Southampton will get the victory.
Mm-hmm. Likely no Paul Pogba or Scott McTominay either. Meanwhile, Shaka, Liverpool, after that anemic display against Atalanta in the Champions League, have to go down to the South Coast and take on a Brighton team who are still looking for their first home win, but have been a little better than their results suggest. Is this a problematic game?
Not for Liverpool, it's not. Listen, I think as much as Brighton can look at that win against Villa in their last outing, I think that was more to do with a tired Jack Grealish than anything Potter or Brighton themselves had to do. I think the only question for Jurgen Klopp is, does he go with a full-strength team, as we saw against Leicester, where Liverpool put down a marker, or just kind of give them the injury issues that they've already had, and a tightening Champions League table, as we spoke about over the last couple of days, if he makes more changes yet again in expecting Brighton not to be really able to compete. If Liverpool put out anything near a full-strength side, what we saw against Leicester, this will be pretty one-sided and over pretty quickly. Maybe he changes things. Even so, even if he brings in me two Williamses, etc., etc., I still think Liverpool have enough to get this to beat Brighton, despite what we saw against Atalanta.
Yeah. Brighton, fifth bottom at the moment, as we look at the very strange-looking bottom half of the Premier League standings, all those big names involved.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The U.S. women's national team in action for the first time in 261 days. Breda in the Netherlands was the venue, and the same opponents they beat in the Women's World Cup final in 2019. As it turned out, the same end result, courtesy of Rose Lavelle, an absolute beauty just before the break. Cutting inside on her left foot, now playing for Manchester City, of course, Lavelle with the unerring finish. And then a real feel-good story, 20 minutes from time, Christy Mewis coming off the bench to play for the first time in over 6 years. And guess what? She got on the score sheet. Little flick on, the touch on, and Mewis with a deadly finish. So it was the same scoreline as it was, 509 days ago now when they played in the World Cup final. Julie Foudy called the game for us on ESPN. Julie, give us your main takeaways after all this time off.
I was going to say that last game feels about like 5 decades ago, yeah. Adrian, given the COVID times. Main takeaways. One, I mean, that Christy Mewis goal, the one you just talked about, I literally like, I got emotional calling the game because here's a player who had been in with the national team. Obviously, her younger sister, Sam Mewis, is now a star of the national team. And she finally gets another look. She gets another chance. She wins the title with Houston Dash in the NWSL earlier in the year. And the two of them were playing side by side, which was great fun for a lot of fans to see as well. So that was one of the highlights. I think the fact that you saw a team who, this national team, as you said, hadn't played for 261 days. That's 8.5 months. They hadn't actually had a game. They had one training camp. All the European-based players missed that. So literally their first time together, and they looked good. I mean, it wasn't the cleanest I've ever seen them. It wasn't the sharpest we've ever seen them. But to play a Dutch team who, as you mentioned, they played in the final of the World Cup in 2019, a very good Dutch team, and to play as good as they did, at one point, it was 13 shots to the United States, 0 to the Dutch, well into the second half. So it could have been 4, could have been 5. You got Alex Morgan back in the game. I mean, there was a lot of positives to take from that if you're the United States.
Yeah, that was another big storyline, Julie, and it had been since that World Cup final, since we'd seen Alex Morgan last. Of course, to see her come on must have been a big bonus.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a player, her last game, you know, you talk about the rest of the team being 8.5 months ago, she was 16.5 months because, of course, she had her baby. She had actually, Charlie was seen in the stands there, her daughter who was born on May 7th. So she's been fighting back from getting back from pregnancy. She gets to Tottenham where she's been playing over in England, and she actually was fighting through a knee injury. So really limited minutes. She actually has a goal in this game that gets called back, unfortunately, because I think that would have been tremendous for her. But But to have Alex Morgan back in the lineup, back getting some minutes, is another huge stride for the United States.
Mm. Julie, just talk a little bit about the coach, Vlatko Andonovski, because he's now 11-0 since taking over at the helm. Nobody's ever had as good a start as at the helm of the U.S. women's national team. Are they getting stronger and stronger?
They are. And if you can prove after 8.5 months off that you could still easily and handily beat one of the best teams in the world, I mean, I think it gives you an indication of just how good this U.S. team is and how good they're going to continue to be under his reign, because he's a beloved coach from the NWSL days. He obviously coached in Kansas City, won a couple titles there. He coached then at Seattle. And he was the player's recommendation to come in as coach because they know how good he is. He's super deep. Detailed, very technical and tactical, and he's a player's manager. He has all the elements. So they love to play under him. He knows the game well. They're learning, they're growing. And, you know, and he's full of an embarrassment of riches, as we always say with the United States team. Tons of depth, tons of players, and he's got a youth group that's coming in. You saw just a sampling of that in today's game that he'll also be looking at. And so when you think about that roster for the Olympics, having to get cut down to 18 versus 23 for the World Cup, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it's definitely going to be an issue for him to chop it down that low.
Yeah, he really has his work cut out for him, doesn't he, Julie, getting that squad down to 18 for next year's Olympics. Great stuff. Great to have you on the call. Thanks for joining us on the show as well. Julie Foudy. We will have MLS action for you this weekend. A great doubleheader, Eastern Conference semifinal action, Orlando and the New England Revolution. That's ABC, Sunday, 3 o'clock Eastern. And then on ESPN, Sunday at 8, Columbus taking on Nashville. And just like that, in a blink of an eye, we are done. Thanks very much to Craig and Shaka for their contributions. Ali as well for his great memories of Diego Maradona. We will see you back here next time.